if you are going to do anything, take your shoes and socks off and go walk on the ground. And more important, if you have kids, take their shoes and socks off and go walk on the ground for 30 minutes every day to feel what the earth can actually do for you.
Hey, Benjamin, and welcome to the Ancestral Mind podcast. Can you give me a quick version of your story? Give us an idea of where this all started. Let's get it kicked off.
Yeah, my name is Ben. This quick story is I was raised in the soil, then I left the soil, and then I had some problems in life, and coming back to the soil is what made me feel so great. I mean, that's one of the main reasons why I wrote this book. So I have my own podcast, and I started to realize that I started to say playing in the dirt a lot. I mean, we need to get out and work, and I didn't like saying work. I like to say play, because it should be. I mean, we live in a life where everyone's too serious. And I said, well, instead of working out in the dirt, let's go out and play in the dirt. And when I first started doing it, when I got back to start doing it, it was a life changer. It helped me so much. And then I started to study it and what the soil is and how it helps us. And not only the soil, but just being out in nature. And it's like, I need to write about this, because there's just way too many benefits. And that's how the book came about. I'm a chiropractic physician. So I've been working as a chiropractor for the last 10 years. I've worked in various clinics. And then at the same time, I started growing chicken on pasture for my patients and for my family. And then from there, it just kept on growing. My interest in what is food as fuel. And that brought me back to the soil, and how if we don't have a soil that's alive, the food that we're consuming is basically just dead calories. So I just kept on studying about it. And that's how the book came about, Playing in the Dirt. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, among other things, I imagine. But that's going to be one of the major things that we're going to be talking about, is my book that it's been out for about 3 weeks now, and it's coming along, but we'll talk about that. But that's basically how I came to write this book, is slowly but surely I came back to what I always was. I was raised on a garden. I kind of left that, and then my life brought me back to it. And it's been wonderful.
So here's what I like and hate about ancestral health at the same time. There's so much to it when you look back and you think about all the things that we do today versus what we did back then and what was done differently. But what I like about your book, and what you've, at least just the title and the simplicity of the direction you're taking, is you're focusing on one thing. You're like, here's the dirt, here's the soil. This is basically the microcosm of how we can start to fix what is wrong ancestrally with how we live, right? So without spoiling, if somebody wants to go grab the book and read it, without spoiling that, what would you say the overarching kind of theory is there with the soil itself?
Well, in the book, what I'm doing is I'm talking about 8 specific things that we can do as human beings that will improve our health, if physically, emotionally, and spiritually. It's not just physically. When people think about the garden or getting back into nature, they're thinking of physically, because you're eating nutrient-dense food or other things where you're moving. No, but it helps quite a bit emotionally. And if we're healthy spiritually, the emotional and the physical health is a lot easier to maintain. So actually getting back into nature is a great way to improve your health in all 3 aspects of health, which are very, very important. We can't just try to focus on one. We're holistic beings. We have to do things where we are improving health in all spectrums of our life. And what I, through all this research and all this, a lot of just putting my life out there. So the book is full of my own life's experiences, the hard times. So it's really hard to write, because this book talks about those really hard moments in my life where I was like, dude, what am I doing here in this world? I have no reason to be here, and I don't want to be here anymore, and I'm not bringing anything out. And going out into nature, planting a garden, helped me to overcome those things. And so the book's full of a lot of personal experiences too, and how it's helped me personally move on and deal with life's struggles also.
That's a great point. When you're looking at kind of humans throughout history, they've always contributed to their tribe, right? Like, before we became what we became, you went out and got food. Everybody shared the food. It was great. You feel like you contributed something. Today, we go to a 9-to-5 job. We type some numbers in some spreadsheets, and it's really hard to get that sense of accomplishment, or at least that sense that you provided something for somebody of value and helped them. So as it doesn't seem like it would need to be something that we need, but I think it becomes more and more clear that in order to be happy, you need to kind of do what you've always done, which is help everyone around
you. Oh, yeah. I mean, to tell you the truth, one of the things that I like most about the garden, it's not the whole planting process and seeing the seeds grow and seeing the fruit grow. It's actually taking the fruit off the plant or taking the animal I raised and preparing a food and sharing it with other people. I mean, that's got to be one of the most beautiful things about playing in the dirt is the ability to share what you grow with other people. It's so emotionally satisfying, and it's a beautiful thing to be able to do that. So I think you're completely correct. And yeah, a lot of it's lost in this 9-to-5 hamster wheel, go to work, come home, and I'm too stressed to do anything else, so I just sit down and watch the television. But yeah, it's a beautiful feeling and to be able to do that.
Yeah, we don't even get to leave the house to do the 9-to-5 thing anymore. So that's, we don't even get like the sunlight kind of through the window of the car while we're yelling at people in a traffic jam.
And it's like every day is the same day now. I know, and there's no difference. Just you even lose track of the days. It's crazy.
So before we get into the rest of the specifics of the soil and all that stuff, you said something off air that I got to talk about. And you were telling me that you were robbed recently, and I got little bits and pieces of the story, but I kind of want to know the whole story. Like, what happened? How did that affect the book coming out? Did you lose like pages you had written? Tell me what happened.
I'll never forget it because it was the 28th of February, 2020 at about 8:40 at night when we got the call from my mother-in-law saying we had been robbed. And we were out enjoying a dinner with some buddies that had come to visit in Argentina. We left the house. So we left the house at about 8:15. Got to the restaurant. We ordered the food. And then my mother-in-law calls me. And I was like, well, she rarely calls me. So I pass it to my wife. She answers the phone. And I continue to chat. And she's like, we just got robbed. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? So we got up. We had already ordered the food. We got up, said bye, and went home. And yeah, it was about as bad as you could possibly think. They took the door and they bent it inwards somehow, and they got themselves inside the house, and then they just took whatever they wanted, which happened to be one of my computers with all my – luckily, I had – the book was in the cloud, so I didn't lose the book. I didn't have to start from one. But the 5 months of marketing material that I had planned, because I was supposed to launch the book the following week, was gone, all of it. So I had to go back in step one and start it all over again. And that was 5 months. So this book was supposed to come out in April and it ended up coming out 3 weeks ago. So I had to go step one. Luckily, I had a lot of it in my mind still. So it didn't take as long. And to tell you the truth, I look back at it and I say, I mean, was I robbed at the wrong time or was I robbed at the right time? I mean, it's kind of hard to, because it probably was better now than it would have been then. But it still was heartbreaking, and realizing that slowly through the process, because I didn't get home and realize like, oh my gosh, they just stole all my material. It was halfway through the police report where I realized like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna have to start from zero on this marketing plan again. It came in slowly, and it was a devastating 4 or 5 hours of like, oh my goodness, this is gone, that's gone, this is gone, that's gone. And yeah, it was 28th of February 2020, and it was tough, but we got through it and we're moving on. So,
well, it sounds like you have the right mindset on it. You said, I don't know if it was the right or the wrong time, you know, who knows how much money they got away with on top of it, like how much value there, but they, at least in that bright way of looking at life, like, you know, that maybe your marketing content is better now that you had a second go through it and all of it, like, you knew the basics, but now you knew 5 months at the end, you had that much experience now starting at the beginning of it, which is valuable to an extent. So maybe in the end, your book will do even better and you'll be kind of better off for it and get more value than you lost in the thievery from
the
beginning.
And that's what I'm hoping. To tell you the truth, that's what I'm hoping. And at the moment, I didn't feel like that. I mean, it's like, dude, why did this just happen?
Yeah, of course.
But now that I look back at it, it's like, okay, so was it the right time? I mean, there's never a right time to be robbed, especially when they're taking so much. I mean, the material things come and go. So they did take a lot of money, and they did take a lot of our computers with memories on it, which those also don't come back. But in the end, It probably was the right time that they took what they took, even though I had to do everything from my iPhone. So everything I was written. So I learned how to write really fast with my thumbs because I was writing. I wrote almost everything on my, all the articles, the emails, everything was written on my iPhone. I have everything on my iPhone in the cloud. So that's basically what I had to do because we couldn't get our hands on a computer. We just couldn't get our hands on a computer where we're at. It was just difficult.
We used to have somebody who worked for us in another, it wasn't Argentina, but it was another country. Computers and laptops were a huge premium there. She constantly had issues with her laptop and we were like, why don't we just buy her another one? Well, they're $200 here. We can get like a Chromebook sent over to her and it'll be great. No, it's not that easy. You can't just buy a laptop and send it to somebody. There's ridiculous hoops you have to jump through. So it creates this shortage. And when you get to places like that, a laptop that would go here in the United States for $200 costs $1,000.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the import tax is insane. I mean, insane. Yeah.
Well, is there any, I don't know if you want to answer this question because I don't want to give any new robbers any ideas, but was there anything that they didn't get that you were like, ha, morons, that thing was worth more than everything you got combined and you didn't get it?
Yeah, there was. They took all the Argentine pesos, but they didn't get any of the dollars. So,
so there we go.
But yeah, they took all the Argentine pesos, which was a lot more than I wish they would have took, but they didn't get everything.
any amount more than zero is more than you would wish somebody had taken. Sure. I just remember the time that my car got broken into, they took my dash cam, which was like, I don't know, $50 or something, like $100 or something. But I had a pull cue in the back seat that was $1,000 pull cue that they didn't touch. So I was like, you know what? It's a fine trade-off. You know, I'm... If you're going to break my window, which is at least covered by insurance, and steal my dash cam, whatever, and you didn't get this thing. Whatever. There's nothing good about being robbed. If you're out there listening to the show and you're thinking about robbing somebody, don't do it. But if you're thinking that maybe you need to go play in the dirt, that's what we can kind of bring this back in and help you out with. So how is Argentina related to play with the dirt? How did you end up where you are there? I assume you're on a farm of some kind?
No, I'm a chiropractor. Oh. So my playing in the dirt is my garden. I'm constantly, that's okay. So what I do right now is my constant playing in the dirt is just as I garden as much as I can, get out into nature as much as I can when I'm not treating patients as a chiropractor. I did have a chicken farm. So we raised chicken for meat for a while in the States. And yeah, that was a beautiful experience. That was a beautiful experience. I really liked that experience and we raised it on pasture. So some of the best tasting chicken in the world. But at the moment right now here, I'm in Argentina and it's just all farming and then working with my patients, helping them understand the importance of playing in the soil also.
So if a patient comes to you day one, what are some of the things that you look for to help them with? Like they come in, they're like, hey, you know, my back's hurting or whatever the case. I don't know if they actually see you for that, but I would assume so from a chiropractor standpoint, they're like, hey, my back's hurting. How do you go from your back's hurting to helping them with a diagnosis of, hey, get out there and start doing these three things. And here's step one. This is what you should do.
The first two or three visits, it's mainly just helping them understand their spine and the health of their spine. And then once we get into the whole process of health, which is a lot more than just one thing. So it can't just be the spine. I mean, health overall involves quite a bit of lifestyle changes. That's when we start getting into the beauty of what's outside and what the soil can give you. And so it's usually a couple visits into treatment that we start to really get into, well, what can we do out of the clinic where you can continue to improve and not only improve, but reach a point where you're stable and you're healthy. So it's a more of a process. And yeah, it's about visit three is when I start talking about the importance of getting back into nature. And then after that, we start getting into gardening and food too. So. But the first couple of visits are just trying to get them out of acute pain. The majority of the patients come in, I'm the last resort. They're like, dude, I've been everywhere. I don't know what I'm doing. No one's helping me. Can you help me? All right, let's do this.
So you said you do a lot of gardening, and we've had a lot of guests on the show that are kind of against plants to an extent. So what are your kind of, I mean, we've had hardcore carnivores on the show. We've had people that are not quite as hardcore that they might be keto or something like that, but everybody agrees meat's fine. I don't think we've had any like hardcore vegans on the show yet, but how do you feel about like the plants are poison and that kind of thing that might be going around?
I mean, it's all out there for our good. I mean, of course, if all you're eating is plants, of course, no. If all you're eating is meat, I mean, everything out there is for our good. It's when we take it to extremes. There are poisonous plants. We stay away from them. But usually most things are edible, and unless we're eating them in a way that's too much, which usually we don't, we should be fine. But we need a combination of it all. I'm a huge advocate of meat and fats. We need a lot more fat in our diet, and proteins also, meats, but plants are also part of the human diet. We're not just carnivores. We're not just herbivores. I mean, so we're a combination. We're omnivores.
Are there any super weird or unique foods that you would eat in Argentina that if I was in Thailand, it might be a scorpion or something. I don't know, but is there anything like that down there?
No, Argentina is known for its meats. I mean, Argentina is known for its barbecues. So here, a lot of meat eating. So all those carnivores would be pretty happy down here. there's a lot of meats. I mean, and that's what they're known for. I mean, you look at foods from Argentina, you'll see empanadas and meat. That's what they're known for.
Is it just kind of like every corner of every city you've got some amazing butcher shop that is making some meat for you? Or is it kind of more like I've never been to Argentina, but I've been to Argentinian steakhouses here, which I imagine are nothing like what it actually is. So
no, here in Argentina, I mean, they're called carnicerias, where you go and buy your meat. There's almost one at every corner. I mean, they're all over the place. Because most people, you don't usually go to a supermarket all the time. I mean, you go to the place where they sell the vegetables, and you go to the place where they sell the meat. And usually they have in the neighborhoods. So you just go out and buy the meat from that's one thing I love here. I got to know the butcher. I got to know him really well. I mean, we started playing basketball together. I mean, I would go there and buy meat from him. We'd be talking for 45 minutes sometimes if there was another client. And we started talking, and we ended up realizing that we both loved basketball. He invited me to play basketball, and I got to know him really well. So it's a neat thing here in Argentina where you still get to know the people that you're buying from. You're not just going to the supermarket and paying and then going home. I mean, the people you're buying from, you still get to know. So, there's butcher shops all over the place. And the Argentine cuts are beautiful. I mean, you just don't get the same cut in the States. They know the right cuts for the barbecue. It's beautiful.
And it sounds like you don't have to worry about all the factory farming issues that you would have to worry about here. Even going to like a Whole Foods or something, you've got to be careful with what you're buying. Whereas there, is it just kind of like you're literally buying from the farmers at these corner stores, or how far removed is it?
It used to be like that. It's slowly but surely, unfortunately, moving to the way that the States does it. So a lot of their cattle they're finished off on feedlots. So a lot of the cattle are finished off just eating pure grain. So you got to be careful, and you have to be conscious about the meat you're buying, unfortunately. But yeah, you can still find a lot of cows that are growing on pasture, but they're starting to grow. They're starting to finish them off on feedlots. They don't live their whole life in feedlots, but they're finishing them off in feedlots. So you do have to be careful. You have to be a little bit more conscious about the meat you're eating here too.
I'm wondering if that isn't kind of an inevitability of an economy of scale, where as you're turning the screws in bigger corporations, as they start to consolidate more wealth or more market share, they're going to see, oh no, we can just do this and make it a little bit worse for them, but whatever, it cuts our costs. And they'll end up just like the US eventually. Maybe everybody's just slightly behind us in the race of making our meat as bad as humanly possible. And then I feel like there needs to be regulation to count against that, because if there's not regulation stopping that, all we have are pockets of people like Colin, like yourself, like me, that care about our meats, but we don't affect enough change to solve the problem. I don't know that there was a question there somewhere. I feel like I asked one and then kept talking, but
no, but it's a slow process. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I do what I do now. I mean, doing one-on-one with patients was just too slow. I got to get this out there. It's got to come out more wide. So that's why I started the podcast. That's why I do a lot of what I do is to try to get the word out there a little bit faster, because one-on-one, it's just way too slow. I could talk a patient one-on-one, but that just takes way too long. Yeah, and it's a slow process. I don't see. I mean, usually when the regulated just makes it worse, and slowly but surely. I mean, that's the only way. And you start to see progress in the state. I mean, slowly, from what I see, people are starting to wake up slowly but surely. But yeah, it's a slow process, and so much sickness. I mean, so much preventable sickness just because people don't want to wake up.
It is very, very tough, and you're fighting against years and years of misinformation, and you're also getting kind of next to other misinformation. So you're like, even though we exist in two separate spaces, the path to getting to where you get to, vegans and carnivores kind of take a similar path. They get away from what they distrust about the status quo, and they end up where they end up, and they took slightly different paths to get there, but it comes from the same place. So if someone comes to you and they come to you and they say, hey, I'm a vegan, do you try to change their mind, or you just try to kind of make sure they're doing it better?
No, I always give my opinion. I'm like, personally, my opinion, for what I've learned, meat's part of the diet. I know most people leave because they see those videos of the slaughterhouses and of the feedlots, and like, I can't support that. And that's the reason why most of them leave. And just like the same thing you're saying about the carnivores, they see that, well, the plant, this plant has certain chemical that's its defense, and it's going to cause me harm because over the 1,000 years that this plant's developed, that's how it's defended itself, and it's not good for us. At the same time, I mean, we need them both. But we just got to make sure we're getting clean food. And the best way to get that clean food is how? I mean, the food that we raise ourselves. Of course, a lot of us don't have room to raise animals. So that's when we have to go out and find that clean food. Sometimes that could be 100 miles away. But you find that food and you bring it in. And that's the most important thing. So I give my opinion and what I feel is the best way to feed yourself. And it's a combination of everything. I mean, most people, like I say, most people just don't get enough good fats, and that's because they're eating bad meat, or they just stopped eating meat. So meat's a very important part. But at the same time, I grow vegetables, and some of the best tasting food that I've made is a combination of vegetables and meat on the barbecue. So it's important that we try to get a combination of everything. And that's why the soil's so important. I mean, we always come back to the soil. What are we eating? It comes from the soil. So if the soil's dead, it doesn't matter if it's the animal eating the grass that's dead, or if we're eating the fruit that comes from the soil that's dead, we're going to have absolutely no nutrition. So coming back to the soil, building soil. So I personally think that one of the major jobs of us as humans is rebuild the soil. I mean, you don't have to be a farmer to rebuild the soil. I talk about the book is we should all be composting. Everything that's organic should be going back into the soil. So start composting. Even if you live in a city, you start composting under your sink, and take that soil and put it back in your flower pots and grow a vegetable. And so you're going to see that the taste, you're going to be, wow, oh my goodness, there's actually a taste to this vegetable, where before you just eat it or you didn't, but there's no taste to it. So going back to the soil is fundamental. We have to build soil. We have to regenerate the soils that have been dead for now too long. And that's a job we can all do. We can all do our part just by, and starting out by composting. That's step one, is composting. From there, I mean, the joy of gardening just goes from there.
So let's say you're living here in America, and you live in an apartment complex. We can even say that. You've got your little tiny balcony or something. So we've got step one is find a way to compost under your sink, right?
Mm-hmm.
What step two, would you recommend getting some sort of pots, or, since I don't even know what to call them, but some sort of container to put some soil in outside, or where, how would you go from there?
I mean, if that's all you got, yeah, container gardening on your balcony. I mean, that's where you start. And then from there, it's funny. I've had the same experiences here. In the first house we lived here, we had no backyard. It was all concrete. And then my front yard there was no front yard. It was the street, some dirt, and then the sidewalk, and then the house. So it really wasn't my front yard. You could call it the community. And I took that, and that's where I gardened. So in between the street and the sidewalk. So people would come by and ask me, he's like, what are you doing? I'm planting a garden. And the first thing they'd ask me is like, don't they steal everything? And then after that, yeah, of course, we'd have a great conversation. But
yeah, they already did steal everything.
But that's how I started. And then from there, I was able to get into contact with some people from the city I'm living in, and they let me use another piece of land, which was a lot more. And I was able to go there and start growing with other people. But it all started with just me going out front and gardening. And that brought me the opportunity to find a bigger spot. So community gardens are growing, are sprouting up all over the place. So if you're living in a city, the first thing is start to compost. And then second, plant some stuff where you can. If that's your balcony, or if you got a place where you're a place in the apartment complex that's green, try to get permission to grow there. I mean, we should be growing food everywhere we could. That's what happened during World War II. The Victory Gardens were not just your backyard garden. They took spots everywhere. There was Victory Gardens weren't just backyard gardens. There were open plots. There were wherever there were dirt was, people were planting gardens to, in that time, supposedly support the soldiers, but they were supporting themselves too, giving them that nutrient dense food that they really did need. And that could be done today. I mean, there's no reason why not to. And of course, turning all that corn and soy and those thousands of acres of monocrop, we'll give that back to the animals and let them fertilize that, let the grass grow back and let them eat that. And then, of course, we can eat healthy meat too. But there's so much we could do with just little space. Because I've been there. Like I said, I had five planter boxes in my backyard and a little 8x8 garden in my front yard, and it turned into a big, huge community garden eventually. It took 2.5 years, but it gave me the time. I mean, we were able to build up a pretty big garden. Of course, I'm not even there. They continue to build it up with me not being there.
So what do you think is a great entry level thing to grow? Would it be like a potato? Would it be like a zucchini? Like what would be like, start with this one. It's easy. It'll grow pretty quick.
Yeah. The most popular plant is a tomato. Most people start with tomato. I'm not saying it's easy. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about gardening. We continue to learn every year. I mean, every year you were getting better. I remember talking to my grandpa that gardened his whole life. It's like, Grandpa, why don't you write a book? Can't you? I want the information that's in your head. And he's like, Ben, I'm learning every year. There's something new I learn every year from the garden. So it's an experience where we're always learning. So it's intellectually also stimulating. It's a beautiful thing. So, I mean, most people start with a tomato. They put a seed in a planter box or in a flower pot, and they go from there.
I love that you just said that your grandfather told you he was learning things every day, because in every field, whether it's food related, whether it's back on those 9-to-5 spreadsheeters that we were talking about earlier, you'll become stagnant in whatever that field is if you stop learning. And that's just great advice in general. Sage advice from our elders to continue to learn.
Yeah.
If everybody could continue to learn one new thing every day.
And that's the thing. Back in our ancestors, I mean, the older people had a very important role. Their role was to teach the new generation. I mean, we've lost that. We look down at the old people now. I mean, oh, they don't know anything. No, they're full of information. They're full of great things that they can teach us. And that was their role back then, because they didn't have the strength to get out and work, but they did have the strength, the mental strength to teach the new generation to do what they needed to do to continue to produce and continue to live in a healthy manner. And that's been lost in what is today. I mean, we don't see that anymore.
Well, it's not the only thing that's been lost today, but there's definitely it's definitely one of them.
Oh, for sure.
We've gotten so many things out of convenience that we don't realize. Maybe in 500 years, humans will evolve into such a way that they need the convenience, and it's actually worse to do what we're doing. But we're not there yet. We're not even close. 500, actually, 500 is like not. That's only five people. I don't know. Maybe it's got to be like 5,000. I don't even. That's a lot. So we will be on other planets before it's time to do anything differently. So bringing this back to you, what you're doing and everything that's been happening with you. I like to ask this question a bit with people who have kind of grand things that they're doing. But if you could remove all of the constraints that you currently have, and whether it be money, whether it be like not enough land or whatever it is, and work on one project and just get it going, what would that be for you?
Well, right now, the one thing I'm doing, and hopefully it's the thing that's what I should be doing, is making what the book is into a lifestyle. In other words, I'm turning the chapters of my book into ways to teach the masses through classes and courses. So that's what I'm doing right now. And I think if I can get this out there as to many people as possible, I can see huge change. And what is the overall health of the world? And I feel that's where I should be going. So I'm focusing on that right now. And with time, hopefully, that'll give me space to get some more land and do even more. But now that's the focus. And I believe that's the way that's where I should be going.
So more or less, you've already removed your own constraints and you're headed in that direction. So that's very few people can say, if I could remove every constraint, I would be doing exactly what I'm doing. So that's an awesome situation to be in. I've looked at throughout history. You have people like an Elon Musk who They got all the money they could ever need with PayPal, so we ended up making electric cars. And it's always interesting what you can do when the constraints are removed. So I'm glad that you're able to go in that direction and become the Elon Musk of the dirt.
I don't know. That would be pretty cool.
So coming up towards basically the end of the episode here, we've given a lot of advice. We've given a lot of anecdotes and stories. If you could leave the listeners with one or two things about their future and living more in tune with their ancestors that we haven't covered yet, what could those be? Maybe two action items for somebody listening to this episode to go forward.
Perfect. Well, before I'm going to get to that, but I mean, with the book, there's 8 action steps, and I'm going to give what the soil can do for us, and then I'll say, I think the 2 most important ones for getting started. So if we return to the soil, first of all, returning the soil makes our nutrition simple. There's no more studies to have to be done. There's none of that really is important if we just return to the soil, because the soil will give us all the nutrition we need. That's through eating animals and through eating plants. If we do that, nutrition becomes simple. Even if we're supposedly sick and we're taking more of one supplement than another, if we return to the soil, we'll be able to use what's in the soil, and that'll help us heal. So it makes nutrition simple. That's one of the things that's so beautiful about returning to soil. By feeling her, we heal. There's a type of therapy in the United States called ecotherapy, where they just take you out into the woods so you can feel nature. Just feeling her heals us, decreases all forms of stress. So it decreases not only the physical stresses and the emotional stresses in life, but any type of stress, the toxic stresses, all the stresses in life, it helps reduce those. It builds communities. I mean, it builds communities. Like I said earlier, it helped me build a community just by me planting a garden in the front yard. Naturally, people would ask me, what are you doing? And we'd strike up these conversations. We'd have great conversations. And these people that I would get to know my neighbors a lot better than I would have if it wasn't for the garden, for being out in nature. It provides us movement against our muscles and our bones, which we have to. If we're not moving, we're sick. So getting out and with a shovel and lifting dirt is a great way to put, I mean, dirt is probably one of the heaviest things out there, and it's free. I mean, we can lift it whenever we want. We just have to go find someone. If you're in a city, it can be difficult. It builds our immune system. Like right now, the whole coronavirus pandemic, I mean, people are scared of a virus. And if we would just get out and interact with that bacteria and the viruses that are in the soil, that would develop our own immune systems, and we wouldn't have to be scared anymore. There's no need to be scared anymore. If we just get back to the soil and let our own immune system develop, and a lot of that bacteria, a lot of those viruses found in soils, in the air, and everywhere else around us helps develop that immune system so we can fight off all that stuff that comes in. I mean, because it's all around us. It's not going to leave. We just have to live with it. And the stronger we are, the easier it is to live with it. And playing in the dirt is a great way to develop our immune system. To me, one of the things that helped me with is it helped me stay in the present moment. So it was a type of meditation. So that's where the emotional part comes in. It brings you back to the present moment. So it not only brings you back to the present moment, but it brings you back to the present moment while you're doing something good. So you're building soil, you're growing food for yourself and your family, for your neighbors. So you're in the present moment doing something good. And it was a great way. That's one of the things that helped me get through chiropractic college in those really hard times where I wasn't controlling my internal dialogue, where it was telling me things that weren't true, was those 15 minutes of watering the garden and just being in the present moment, doing something good. And then the last thing is something that's becoming a lot more popular now. It's called grounding. It's called earthing. It's where all you do is you take your socks and shoes off and you go out and touch the ground. Just be present, touching the ground. And that's what I would leave. I would say, if you are going to do anything, take your shoes and socks off and go walk on the ground. And more important, if you have kids, take their shoes and socks off and go walk on the ground for 30 minutes every day to feel what the earth can actually do for you. And once you're doing that, get your hands dirty. Get your hands dirty in the soil, because that's the best way to develop an immune system where you're not going to have to worry or be scared about anything that's around you. You'll be strong enough that it doesn't matter if it comes, you're going to be strong enough to deal with it. So those would be the 2 things. Take your shoes and socks off. If you've got kids, take your shoes and socks off and go hang out on the soil. That can be the grass, that can be the sand, that can be the water. Just take your shoes and socks off and enjoy what nature has to give you, because the healing effects, which we didn't get into on this episode, are incredible. And then put your hands in some soil, because the feeling, the smell, it's a beautiful feeling, and you're going to feel more alive if you do it. So those would be the two things I would say. But it, like I said, there's many more. And in my book, I talk about 8 of them, which I gave you a little summary. But like I return, take your shoes and socks off and your kids' shoes and socks off, play in the dirt, stand on the dirt, and get your hands dirty in the dirt.
All sage advice. So if we wanted to find your book, is Amazon the best place? I mean, obviously, listeners, you can click the link in the show notes. We're going to have that. But if you just want to type something into your browser, what's the best place to go to get a copy?
Yeah, it'd be Amazon. If you're living in the States, you can just go to my website and I can send it straight to you. So it's on my website and it's also on Amazon.
And is the website the Pastos Verdes Farm?
Yep. That's it. So you go to pastosverdesfarm.com or you can just get it on Amazon. And then if you want to get in contact with me, it's the place that I'm usually on social media is Ben Page DC. It's at Ben Page DC and it's Instagram. That's where I'll get back to you if you talk to me on Instagram.
Is the DC Washington DC or something else?
No, Doctor of Chiropractic.
Oh, okay. There we go. That's of course that's what it is. What have we been talking about this whole episode? Don't put me in charge. Anyway, so awesome. So we can follow you on Instagram. We can find you on your website. Links again in the show notes, but the listeners can just go directly there. They don't have to pull up their thing on their phone and find it. Go follow and interact. You've got a whole podcast. What's the name of your podcast?
Well, the podcast is the Wellness Farmer Podcast. Yep. So that's another thing you can look up if you're interested, the Wellness Farmer Podcast. And if you speak Spanish, I do in Spanish too. It's called El Podcast La Salud Integral.
Awesome. So you could do it right from your app, right here, whatever you're listening to us on. You can just do that and you can find his podcast and keep this going. And you can even keep it going in Spanish. So if this has been interesting to you, do that right now. Go ahead, do it. So as far as we're concerned, last question I have for you is, what is your favorite cut of meat?
Ooh, it depends on where you're cooking. But if you're cooking on the barbecue, the cut is, unfortunately, I don't know the names in English, but it'd be the ribs. But they cut the ribs here different. It's called tira de asado. Here in Argentina, it's called tira de asado. And it's a specific cut of the ribs, which is just beautiful, or vacío, which is the part just under the ribs. Those are the two best cuts for the barbecue, man. And all you do is you place some salt on them, let it sit for a little while, 15 to 20 minutes, and throw those on the barbecue. There's nothing better than that. Nothing better than that.
That is the first time we've gotten that response. Almost everybody else just says ribeye. So I'm glad we have some new, awesome, actionable items. Although I wish we could get it in the States. We probably can't. So,
I mean, there was some Mexican meat markets where you could get... They did give you vacío, but they cut it a lot thinner and they called it flank. I think it's flank steak. I think in English is the flank, but they cut it a lot thinner. Here in Argentina, they live it thick. So it sits on the barbecue for about a good 2 hours. And when it's done, it's just impressive. And then, yeah, the rib cut is cut. It's not cut side. It's not cut. So it's cut longer. Not the length of the rib. But the cut of the rib is a little bit wider. It's not so thin. So it's got a lot more meat on it. And so it takes a little bit longer to cook on the barbecue. And it's just amazing.
All right. Well, now I'm hungry. I've been fasting all day and I'm ready to go break that. So thanks for being on the show. This has been an awesome show. And we'll let you know as soon as it airs. And we love to have everybody back on the show, ideally 6 to 8 months after their show comes on. So hopefully we'll have you back.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'd love to come back on, talk about the progress. Hopefully there's a lot.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. And everybody have a great day from the Ancestral Mind.
Please always remember that the members of the Ancestral Mind podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody, and make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.
We just launched our Patreon, so if you want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/Colin Stucker. That's patreon.com/ColinStuckert. We will have exclusive updates coming. It will also give us more opportunities to invest more in the show and release more shows. Some other bonuses with the different tiers. Check it out over at patreon.com, and thank you for your support. Another way that you can support the show is you can head over to Wild Foods and use code AMPODCAST12 for 12% off your entire order of real food, superfood, supplements, and ingredients. These are products that I've been using myself in my daily life for years. I recommend checking out our fish oil and our collagen, and also make sure you check out the Cocotropic. It's one of my favorite products. Cocoa, mushrooms, delicious. Head over to wildfoods.co and use AMPODCAST12 for 12% off your entire order. I want to let you know about my newest podcast over at Escaping Fragility, a show about building a life for yourself, being safe, being secure, having a plan B, so that if this crazy world of 2020 continues or gets worse, which a lot of the numbers are suggesting it will, then you and your family will be protected. A lot of my content for my personal brand has been focused on giving people the knowledge, the expertise, the skills, and just the awareness of some of the craziness that's going on so that they can protect themselves, so that they can fight back, so that they can be civilly disobedient, so that we can stymie the ever encroaching spread of government and of corporate and political agenda. If more citizens do not stand up, fight back, speak up, there's going to be nothing left to protect. And I don't like fear mongering, and I'm generally an optimistic person, but 2020 has stressed me out. At first it didn't, but then it did. When I really saw what was going on, when I read a little bit between the lines, and even now, the craziness is continuing, and I don't see it letting up anytime soon. The masses are too easily manipulated. And so I'm more concerned what's going to happen in 2021 when the next flu season comes through and another coronavirus is weaponized, and then who knows what's going to happen. Travel restrictions, mandatory vaccines, chipped and prodded like cattle. People think it can't happen. They stick their head down, but they did in Mao's China. They did in Stalin's Russia. They did in Nazi Germany. And then it was too late. And who pays the price? It's always, always, always the citizens that are having faith and that are just hoping things get better. They're the ones that always pay the price. So the first thing we can do is protect ourselves and our family, have our plan B, have an escape option, and then we can help others. Head over to Colin.coach, get on the AM5 newsletter. You'll get all the shows every week. And you can also find me on YouTube and iTunes or Spotify or Google Play. Get prepared before it's too late.